Hey everybody, it's Zach Harper from The Athletic, The Athletic's podcast, The Athletic Writing, Power Rankings, and now The Athletic's new YouTube show, The Restricted Area, a weekly NBA show with myself and Wasley Lambre, the cultural anthropologist, going around finding the most interesting stories from the NBA, giving some historical context, and trying to figure out just what the hell is going on. Oz, let's go back to 1949 and the newly formed NBA. Clifton McNeely, a 28-year-old guard, 28-year-old guard from Texas Wesleyan and a veteran of the Army Air Corps, was taken number one by the Pittsburgh Ironmen. And Waz, take a look at him.
Guy was somehow older than Buddy Hield. But seriously, Zach, back then, almost dunking was considered to be a highlight. And were these cats wearing shin guards?
This is the tough thing about Clifton McNeely. He didn't even want to play.
With the amount of pre-draft scrutiny that goes on these days, it's hard to imagine that you would have to ask a guy, do you even want to play basketball? Do you even want to play basketball? Do you even
want to play basketball? Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Bruh. New York strip steak? Ooh.
This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
This is Nerder She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
Hello and welcome to a special Athletic NBA Show Universe crossover edition post-draft first round show. I'm Dave Dufour. We got Zach Harper in the house, Seth Partnow, Trayvon Edwards, Marcus Thompson, Big Waz, fellas. We just watched the first round of the draft. Zach, I'm going to start with you. Not as many moves early as we all expected.
Yeah, not as many moves early. I think some of that happened, you know, because of the last couple of days and teams were moving in. I do think that we're going to see a lot of moves this weekend with trades. I think some of it was just posturing to try to move up in the draft. I also wouldn't expect all of these guys who are drafted and where we think they're drafted to start the season with those. But, well, actually, I don't know what the draft rules are going to be with trading contracts because the season starts in like 48 hours at this point. But, you know, at some point, I think they're all going to be moved.
There was there was so much talk and I was texting in the group chat about Cleveland trying to move that five pick and just not being able to do it. Obi Toppin dropping to the Knicks, does that surprise you at all that they picked up another power forward? I mean, that seemed to be the pick at five that nobody wanted to make.
Yeah, it was. They picked up a good one.
Well, I mean, Denzel Valentine doesn't tickle your fancy?
No.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we talked about this on Hoops Adjacent earlier today, and nobody knows what the Knicks are doing, what they're trying to do, what they want to do. Are they rebuilding? Are they trying to win now? Are they trying to attract superstar veterans? Are they trying to just attract any overpaid veterans at all? So you can't really be surprised when the Knicks do something that nobody understands.
How did you guys feel about the Wiseman pick at two? And we'll talk about Clay in a little bit. But I was thinking once we saw that Clay had suffered an injury, maybe that pick was going to get moved. Because we had all talked about the fact that it seemed like they'd settled on taking Wiseman. And, of course, Marcus Thompson's on here, who I completely forgot because he hadn't said anything. Marcus, I think we all thought coming into today – Wiseman was the guy. And then after the Clay news, I started to feel like maybe they're going to move that pick and try to figure that out. Did you feel the same way?
Nah, I figured this would be the reason they wouldn't move the pick. I mean, people have to remember, like, man, it's a bread issue. You know, like, Clay is $40 million. They weren't even sure they were going to spend the $17.2 million trade exception. So they can't just add four players. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had to shore up a starter position. If Clay doesn't get hurt, they got their starting five. They're set. So to trade James Wiseman, and now you got to fill two positions with that trade, felt kind of counterproductive. They thought this was their guy. They thought he was the center of the future. You kind of got to do it now. Like, you had to take him at that point, because if you don't, you just add in more influx to what you already have. So now they're kind of back in the same position. They got four starters, and now they got to go figure out what they're going to do at two guard if Klay is indeed out. So I figured it only meant they would really keep the pick. Now they couldn't just trade it and get two guys who you don't know. Maybe they start, maybe they don't. And now you got three-fifths of your starting five. So for me, I felt like the Klay injury made them had to kind of double down on Wiseman.
Well, let's just kind of take a step back. What did you guys think about the draft in general? I mean, the presentation I thought virtually was pretty good. I mean, we all watched the NFL draft, and at least Adam Silver wasn't doing this in his basement. I think that that's a big improvement.
I actually think that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, me too.
To see Adam Silver's basement.
He clearly doesn't have any leather-bound books like my man Roger Goodell.
No wardrobe changes.
I mean, so
I thought the NBA did really well.
I wanted to see the cherry wood like setup, and or no, what Roger Goodell had the all maple wood whole living room. It was like maple wood and old leather.
He had like, rope from the Mayflower. You know,
man, I was in my grandma's house.
Hold on a second, Waz. That is potentially problematic, right there.
Well, no, you know, I meant his people came on the Mayflower voluntarily. That's okay, what I was. Okay. Getting that. Sorry.
Voluntarily, right.
He meant they were driving the ship.
I mean, did anything in particular stand out to you, Trey? You know, I think that this is such a unique draft that something had to.
I mean, honestly, I like the – I mean, for the past 2 years, we've got raw emotion. You know, everybody else be always trying to be too cool in the green room and stuff like that. And maybe I don't know if it's the delay, but you got kids just sobbing and just really grateful to play in this league. Obviously, you know, as us as media members trying to, you know, ask them questions, sometimes that changes. So watching, you know, this small intimate moment with their families and, you know, during these weird times with COVID and stuff like that, it was pretty cool. And everybody had a unique story. Only pushback I had on it was I wanted to see more highlights because we were robbed of March Madness and other things with these kids. Mm-hmm. So some of these kids coming into a situation, they don't have summer league to play. They don't have any opportunity for us to see them. You know, they just going into training camp and in 3 weeks they play. So I didn't really want to know about their character. Like, I mean, it was like a job interview. You know what I mean? Like, we were the GMs in that situation. Like, oh, okay, this one kid, you know, he helps his mom with flowers. Another, you know, it was telling the background about, you know, deceased parents and stuff like that, which is heartfelt. But then there's no basketball in them. It's like one clip of a guy getting a layup or a guy getting a dunk, and then they cut to the next scene. And then it spent more time on the analysts talking, and they didn't really have much to give us. I think the worst one was the comparison to who did they say he was like? Oh, Anthony Davis. I wanted to turn it off on that one.
Seth, what was the worst comp of the night? No, I'm kidding.
All comps are bad, but that one was particularly.
To be fair, there was a 49ers offensive lineman named Anthony Davis. It might have been that.
That's true.
Pretty sure I used to follow that homie on Instagram. I mean,
was that the first comp? The first and only comp, though? Because I didn't see many comps. It was just that one where he snuck that Anthony Davis in. I think somebody just gave him the cut.
They compared Leandro Bolmaro to Leo Messi, which I thought was a little strong.
Well, to be fair, Seth, you've compared Luka Doncic to Wayne Gretzky. So cross-sports comparisons, you know, it's fine.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, the guy who went 20-whatever in this draft got compared to the greatest soccer player of all time. So, whereas Luka Doncic,
what's wrong with that?
I think I'm at least in the right stadium with Luka and Wayne Gretzky, right?
That's true. Hey, you know, that new voice, John Krasinski, our beat writer for the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, you know, kind of owned this draft. What the heck did the Wolves pull off tonight?
Yeah, man, it was super active. You know, they hung tight, talked a lot of trades at the top, but couldn't find any deals they wanted, and they stuck with the guy that they wanted all along, which was Anthony Edwards. Then in the middle of the draft, they swing a deal, trading 17 to Oklahoma City and getting Ricky Rubio back in Minnesota where his career started.
Ricky!
Then they pick up Leo Messi. I mean, Leandro Bolmaro and Jaden McDaniels, another guy who was like super highly recruited, not very productive at Washington. And so a definite, I guess, high ceiling type of play, seeing if they can develop him. But yeah, they were all over the place tonight. It was pretty wild.
Gerson Rosas is like coming in firing. He definitely wasn't like, let me wait this out a year, you know, just take some patience and take a couple picks and see what happens. Like the Knicks were the only other team as involved in trades, it felt tonight.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of does just speak to Rosas's DNA. Like he comes from the Houston school and they want to tinker and they want to trade and wheel and deal and try and win each deal by on the margins by 2%, by 3% to gradually kind of improve the team. What I do give him credit for, and we don't know how all these deals are going to work out and all of this, but he came in to a dumpster fire situation last year and he said, I'm not waiting around. Like these things need to change and change in a major way. And so he's done that. He has two players on the roster that he inherited, in May of 2019. And it's Josh Okogie and Karl-Anthony Towns. Everyone else is different. And so he's just basically said, look, this team isn't good enough. We have a long way to go. And he's trying to do whatever he can to inject talent into it. We'll see how these guys all work out. But I do kind of admire the aggressiveness and not just sitting back and waiting for things to happen.
I feel like one other team we've got to talk about, not just today, but all week, being extremely active has been Oklahoma City, which have they made four or five trades this week and, kind of added the biggest kind of mystery box in this year's draft in Alexei, I'm going to try that. This Pokuševski, am I right?
Got it.
Yeah. Who is, certainly the biggest wild card in this draft, I would say. So they were active and did some things and have completely remade their team and still might be pretty good next year and own half of the next nine drafts, it seems like.
Hey, Josh Richardson just got traded to Dallas for Seth Curry, according to our Shams.
Ooh.
Interesting. 36th
pick. And the 36th pick, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it for Dallas. They could use that defense.
I like it for both teams. Seth Curry is good.
That's a win-win.
Because Philly needed their shooters back. That's where they went wrong, trading their shooters away. Now they got some shooters.
Well, you always got to keep your son-in-law close. You can't let him.
I mean, he traded Paul George for Seth Curry. Seems like a good move to me. Now, Philly was interesting tonight, right? Like, Daryl was extremely aggressive. It seems Daryl and Elton, very aggressive, trying to right the wrongs of the
roster.
I like
how you do the Elton in there. I like that.
I want to make sure.
That's very kind of you.
Got to be a team effort, right, Waz? Now, look, Waz, we killed him. We killed him with the team they put together, but he moved off the Horford deal and got some shooters. Tyrese Maxey could wind up being like a very, very good player, and he got him 21. That's nuts. They had a great draft.
Yeah, and I think, getting off of the Horford deal for a Philadelphia first-round pick, which will probably end up being in, like, the low 20s, I don't think that's pretty good, man. That guy's got 3 years left on his deal at, like, 30 mil per. That's pretty nice on their part.
And they also got Danny Green in that if he is not completely washed, which there's been, some debate about that after, Green got traded.
Whoa. You're going to trigger Dave now. That's one of his favorite players in the league.
I've
we need Dave to start calling Danny Green blunt.
No, Dave and I have been defending Danny Green since he missed one jump shot and everyone decided he wasn't good at basketball anymore. But I think that was a very strong move. The reaction was to one shot.
Like, you're talking about the buzzer beater.
Yeah.
I was just talking about his general inability to hit shots, just period. Some of that might have been injury or the layoff or whatever you want to call it, but we'll see if he can make shots.
The reaction was not to his playoff shooting percentage. The reaction was he missed a buzzer beater that could have won the finals.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
He had a good season. So, all right, Danny Green is a guy that's very interesting to me because I look at getting that contract. It is an expiring contract. He's a good player, but maybe that's a piece they want to send to Houston because it's an expiring contract and it seems like that's what they're looking for in a potential Harden trade. He fits into Marcus that Andre Iguodala traded player exception that the Warriors have. You think there's any chance that the Warriors take a swing at Danny Green if Philly doesn't have him in their plans for this year?
Nah, they got to shoot higher than Danny Green. Like,
There is no higher than Danny Green. Available.
I'm sorry. There's higher available. Than Danny Green. And also, there's younger than Danny Green, too. That's kind of important. I mean, look, if Clay is gone, you don't feel that with, yo, let's bring in Danny Green. Like, and not that you could actually replace Clay, but you got to be able to do something to adjust. And Danny Green just won't be it. I mean, and keep in mind, whoever they get now, this is who this has to work in the long term. Like, it's not like if Clay comes back after this season, like this is an Achilles potentially followed by an ACL. Who's guarding your point guards from now on? Like, you can't be banking on Clay coming back being who he is. So you got to get somebody who's going to be with you for 2 or 3 years, 4 years, you know what I'm saying? Like, now you got to start operating as if Clay will be different and so not what, the same Clay.
I feel like that's what do the Warriors do now? I mean, they were obviously looking to kind of run it back this year with everyone healthy. And like, we don't have any details, but all the reporting has seemed to be that it's a problem. It seems like they're almost caught in the middle. Like they're too good to be bad again, but they're not good enough to be really contenders with Clay out. So what do you do now?
Well, you've got that that beautiful pick from Gersan, which should be two picks, but they might have to start dangling them picks and seeing what you can get for a few picks. And can I say Andrew Wiggins without everybody going crazy? All right, how about a few picks and Eric Paschal? Or, you know, they've got
Alan Smiley Beach.
They've got to start seeing what they can do and hope, you know, that their best chip now is the pick they got from Minnesota before, like, Anthony Edwards carries them to the number 4 seed in the West.
And also, guys, you got to remember, if they're willing to give up stuff, if they're willing to give up draft picks from 2027, then maybe they could get stuff that's better than whatever the wing market presently is, whether it be, you know, scrap heap guys and free agents like a Wes Matthews or whatever, right? Like, if they're willing to trade quote unquote assets, then they should do that to get some wing help.
I mean, they kind of have to, right? This is it, right? Steph Curry is how old, Marcus?
32.
How old is Draymond?
He's 33 in March. Draymond's 30.
Yeah.
Draymond's the youngest of them.
Draymond's an old 30.
That's right. And so,
is that allowed?
Now's the time you go get Bradley Beal. This is the time where you like throw all.
But what do you throw? The tape. What are you going to. Well, what do they have except for that pick from Minnesota?
But that pick from Minnesota is going to
it's
be
a good. Lot.
Trey?
Like, no. That's like, they're, it they
could
suck.
Be,
they
have it two could picks be Cade Cunningham.
Year. Trey and a pick. Trey and a pick. Bye.
Did you say Dre?
Yeah, you got to start thinking about that.
I feel like anything that Golden State can offer for Bradley Beal, New Orleans looks at it and says that's nice and doubles it. Bradley Beal's going to say
I'm not signing with you. I mean hope they have. Yeah, that's right. He is signed. The only hope the Warriors have is if somebody prefers to play with Steph.
But Beal's like two more years, right? It's not like Beal agreed to a 5-year extension. Like, it's like 2 years. You can threaten to move. Like, Steven Jackson once signed an extension and then threatened to, you know, ask for a trade the day
after he signed it. Yeah,
like that. I don't think that matters anymore. Like, if Devin Booker wanted to force a trade tomorrow, he could. If, you know, if any of these guys want to, like, James Harden's got a shitload of years left on his deal and he's trying to get out of Houston. Like, I don't think years left matters anymore.
If Bradley Beal says, "Yo, I'd rather play with Steph." Like, that's everything is on Steph, as it always is, right? All right, Steph, go get your recruit on. Like, who wants to play with Steph?
I mean, what's the list look like? Giannis still hasn't signed his extension yet. I mean, is Steph calling him up right now?
I don't know. Nah, Steph doesn't make calls. Come on, you got to call Steph. You know, Steph doesn't make calls. He makes all-star passes. That's what he does. His call is like some fancy moment in an all-star game. That's how he gets you. Or a hug at
Yeah, it's USA. The hug. It's the post-game hug. I'll look to see if he's hugged Bradley Beal.
He doesn't make calls anymore.
Well, we know he's hugged Giannis.
Warriors might have to worry that he's getting some hugs, you know, with what's happening.
Ethan Strauss joining the show. Ethan, we're talking about the state of the Warriors right now. No Klay Thompson. Marcus says it's time to throw every chip on the table except for Steph. You agree?
Every chip on the table except for Steph. Sure. I just think if the situation with Klay is as bad as is feared, I just don't see any moves. I feel like you're just, I mean, at that point, if it is as bad as people fear, that's like the worst contract in basketball, or it's up there. The Draymond contract's, I don't think great. I agree with Marcus. I just don't see it working is what I'm saying. If it's as bad as feared.
Hollinger had it as the worst contract in basketball, like during last season before, like when he was still going to be coming back from an ACL. And so again, we're getting ahead of ourselves with, you know, worst case scenarios, but you know, what else are we going to do?
Yeah.
So it's
you always have like to remember there are bad GMs, like,
right.
there are always bad GMs. These trades happen for a reason. People walk away with what you didn't think they would have. I mean, I don't know how Sam Presti keeps doing it, but he's got like 97 picks, right? So, I mean, at some point, maybe he wants a player.
I was going to say, a draft pick has yet to make a jump shot. So, you know, like, it's great that he can collect assets, but, you know, you got to do something with them. And somebody has pointed out to me the inability for Oklahoma City itself to keep players. I won't put that on the front office. But next year he's going to draft Cade Cunningham, have him for 7 years, and then we'll make fun of him when he trades him for 8 more draft picks. You know, that's kind of like the life cycle of Oklahoma City.
It's a great GM job preservation strategy. When you start stockpiling all those draft picks, it gives you a long time to work things out. And he's done a good job of that. I'm not criticizing that at all. It just seems like sometimes I wonder about the incentives. Is this all about building a team? Is it all about trying to win now? Or is it about selling an owner on a story that is going to take a while? Is what I often wonder when I see a lot of this, whether it's him or whether it's David Griffin who's doing the same thing. If we're bringing it back to the Warriors, I'm still just reacting to all this and thinking about all this. I don't want to be too fatalistic. I just don't know. I don't know what the solution can be. If we are going with the hypothetical that it is as bad as feared, it's just over. It's closing time on this whole thing, on this whole epoch, on this whole core, barring a miracle. I don't think that's too extreme to say.
Maybe the Allen Houston rule.
You know, well, one of the guys that I thought they might try to trade down and pivot to was Tyrese Halliburton. And then Seth, he winds up dropping way farther than either one of us expected him to.
Yeah, I think that I think that Sacramento has to be ecstatic with how at least the draft has gone for them. And then they picked up Xavier Tillman, who's another kind of similar – very well-regarded field player in the second round, just as we're recording. So getting Halliburton at 12 and then it's Tillman in the second round, that's a pretty good day so far for Sacramento.
I mean, so Ethan, do you have any insight? I know that they liked Halliburton early. Was there and Marcus said he wasn't surprised that they went with Wiseman and stuck to that plan. Yeah. I mean, is it just a matter of getting the best guy possible rather than trying to get the guy who's most ready to contribute now?
Well, there's something strange here because we at the Athletic Bay Area, I will say, had been again and again saying the same thing, which is that the odds are they take Wiseman. I mean, not that we know completely and they have these different workouts and, you know, let's look at Anthony Edwards twice, but it's not a surprise at all. Steve Kerr has been begging for this sort of thing for a while. Kawakami mentioned it in his article, but whenever you talk to Kerr, he would say the same thing, which is, we're not big enough, we're not athletic enough. So do the math on what sort of draft pick he wants. And then I'm just trying to read Kerr, because Kerr is a little easier to read than Myers. You know, Myers, I think, is a little more careful, a little less likely to talk about his preferences, but like size, that's one thing that Bob Myers does like. It's ironic that the Warriors became the small ball team, considering they've been looking for a center forever. And I also know with Kerr that you look at those other top picks and, you know, LaMelo Ball isn't a Steve Kerr player. Anthony Edwards doesn't seem like a Steve Kerr player. I know what the response would be. It's who cares? Coach can't determine it. But when it's a situation where these guys are not surefire lock 'em in Hall of Famers, as often happens in the draft, then those sorts of ties are broken, right? So it seemed like a lot of signs pointed to Wiseman. I also think that there's some smart people, though, who look at the pick and say, if Klay Thompson is really hurt, then maybe you should have gone LaMelo at that point, because you need to shore that up. What do you guys think of that? Should your draft strategy be altered by a late breaking injury the day of the draft?
I'll defer to Seth on this because he's actually been in the room.
I think it can. It's just like I've been, since the Klay Thompson news came out, trying to figure out which way that would actually pull. It can go either way for me. Like on one hand, you can say, well, this gives LaMelo a year to you know, develop and then see what you got. On the other hand, it's okay. We're going to keep Wiseman. We're going to develop him for a year and then hope Klay comes back full strength next year. Wiseman's in his second year when he's more likely to be good.
Try to get Cade Cunningham, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. No, but then, then hope that Steph and Draymond are like, can hold up for one more year, and Wiseman in his second year is a real force, and Klay comes back and it just all comes together. So I don't know. They're in kind of a purgatorial spot of not of being too good to tank for Cade. And again, just there's no path to being good enough to be a legit contender. Again, assuming that Klay is at least compromised for the season.
Can Steph break his hand again? Get him another lottery pick?
I mean, that would be, where's Aaron Baines? Who's he play for?
You get the Wolves pick. You get a shot at Cade Cunningham. I really don't even need a shot at Cade Cunningham. This draft is supposedly loaded. Just getting that top 10. I mean, maybe you get back that way and you build that particular bridge. Yeah, I don't think the Warriors fans will have the patience for that. I don't think Joe Lacob has the patience for that. I think last year was absolutely brutal. I have more takes, though, because I've just landed in the spot with you guys. I don't know what you've discussed. I'm throwing this one out here. It'll be excerpted to humiliate me if it's a bad take and if history proves it wrong. But Anthony Edwards is the number one pick. I mean, I just don't. It's just a no thanks. Like, what?
Expound upon that, Eve.
Why? I mean, okay, what did he do great in his first season in college?
Athleticism.
you prefer guys that like basketball?
Well, there's that too. There's the subjective stuff too. I mean, the subjective stuff has to matter if you don't have any objective stuff that's really helping your case. And we've seen it before that a guy will have a freshman season that's not the most efficient, and then he gets better overall. But if you combine that, he's touted as this, he's touted as that, but he's not racking up the steals in a way that speaks to the athleticism, and he's not. He had that one great game, but overall not scoring efficiently, not really racking up the free throws, not really making plays for others. And then when you combine it with all these goofy interviews, I know nobody would have wanted to make the number one pick, but I mean, LaMelo, I think, would have been more forgivable as a pick. Wiseman, and maybe even a few other options. I just don't get the Edwards thing. The Edwards thing is one where, if he wasn't highly touted coming in out of high school, is he the number one pick?
But yeah, all the things that made him highly touted are why you could sell yourself on him, especially in a bad draft. Like, he is
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23. For a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
One of the most gifted athletes to enter the NBA in a while. From a physical standpoint, he's just a monster for a guy who profiles as a ball-handling guard. He is just enormous and fast and strong. And he had moments, at least, where he made a lot of shots. So all that stuff is,
I just always had it against him. It's so subjective. I sound like a fuddy-duddy. I don't even know. I sound corny, like Kevin Costner in Draft Day, talking about not wanting to draft a quarterback because his teammates didn't show up at his birthday. But I didn't like when I was watching them play Kentucky.
Vontae Mack, no matter what.
I didn't like when I was watching them play Kentucky and they were up 6 at the half and he went crazy just running to the crowd and pumping his arms up like they had won the championship and it was halftime, but it was weird. And Jay Billis was confused. I think Marcus was watching that game too, if I remember, but it was just super weird. It was just super weird. I was just, what's with this guy's decision making? And then they went out the second half and got their ass kicked. And I think Hagen's just totally shut him down. And I just, I saw that and I was out. I was very Bill Simmons-y take, but I was out right there.
I think Ethan said kind of the important words about Edwards and why the doubt is real, despite, you know, the physical tools, is decision making. Because that's, you know, for a guy to be a great player in the NBA, how many of, especially on the wings, how many of like the all-star level players on in the NBA on the wings are not elite level decision makers? And that's, you know, passing, shot selection, you know, defensive gamble, stuff like that. It's none of them. And so a guy who kind of struggles in that area, and, you know, not just kind of that sort of the aesthetic thing that Ethan's talking about, which is annoying, you know, not knowing when to shoot,
he fills out a uniform, you know.
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, it's a very classic kind of all airport kind of thing.
All layup line is what we used to call it. All layup line, baby.
So, okay, the big decision, speaking of taking the number one pick, the big decision that's actually looming right now and kind of hanging over the entire league is Giannis signing the Supermax, which, after the moves of the last couple of days, I think we all expected. Sam Amick is here. Also, Jay King now on the show, but you heard him. Sam Amick, you're now here. What in the hell is happening with Bogdan Bogdanovic?
Gentlemen, good to be with you. First of all,
This is easily the most populated pod I've ever been a part of, so I'm happy to join the cast of 27. Good to be with everybody. It's a mess, man. I mean, you know, it was weird when it first came out because, first of all, tampering is still illegal, and your first thought
right
when the news leaked on Monday was, well, that's funny, because it's pretty tough to get the framework of this kind of a deal agreed upon if you don't have any sense from the player or his camp of what's happening here. And so, you know, people didn't know what to make of that in terms of Bogdan being a restricted free agent and him needing to kind of greenlight this thing. So then, I mean, to be honest with you, that night you were hearing that there wasn't an agreement. You were hearing that there was a problem, but we are kind of conditioned to say, oh, sure, yeah, whatever. You know, you guys got this done and we move on with our lives. And then that noise just didn't go away. So today, you know, when I was talking to people about it, found out that it was in pretty bad shape. And I mean, the bottom line is that right now I'd be stunned if he wound up in a Bucks jersey. I definitely don't expect it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks were trying to hold out hope that it was still going to happen. There is definitely – I don't even know how to provide, you know, kind of somewhat deft analysis, guys, because it's a matter of who do you believe. And there's some mudslinging going on regarding the communication breakdown, regarding who's at fault here, you know, but it's not happening right now. And there's a couple layers to it. I mean, that it's just me connecting dots is like, you know, Jrue Holiday coming to the Bucks, I think, is fascinating because you look at it objectively and you say Giannis has got to be happy, and their title contending status might have gone to a new level. If you're Bogdan, that now means that you became a fourth option, and this is kind of John Hollinger territory, but had a ripple effect on his money. And I, you know, if I had to guess, I think some of those things came into play. But yeah, I mean, as it stands, he's going into restricted free agency. I think there is a fair amount of kind of, you know, displeasure between the two sides in terms of the Bucks and Bogdan's camp.
Hey, Sam, see what happens. Sorry, you cut out right when you were telling us exactly what happened.
Oh, shit. How long ago?
I mean, did he cut out for everybody?
Cut out for you? He cut out for me.
No.
I know he cut out for Jade.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I could switch to sell if that's more reliable.
Yeah, that'd be okay.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems crazy that these cats wouldn't be like, are you cool with this money?
Right.
At these years?
Wait, exactly. What was it?
He was basically just saying Bogey doesn't want to get traded to a team, become a fourth option.
Fourth option.
And then he does the fourth option stuff, and then he doesn't even like the number that they're trying to get him to sign for, which is $14, $15 million, which if I was him, I'd probably think I could get more than that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Knicks about to give Fred VanVleet $30 million.
Right. That's my thing. I mean, and I'll recap.
Yeah,
I'll recap some of that, guys, but I mentioned Hollinger. I don't know if you caught that part in the cutout, but I said this is more Hollinger territory. When it comes to the money and the cap gymnastics, you know, there was a ripple effect on the Holiday deal that impacted Bogdan's, you know, kind of earnings. And beyond that, you know, it's the idea that, speaking of Hollinger, he wrote a piece the other day breaking down all the extension eligible players and kind of handicapping numbers that they were, in terms of market value, worthy of. If I was Bogdan Bogdanovic reading that story, I would also want much more than $14, $15 million a year, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I would be worth it. And so that stuff, I think, is worth chewing on. But, you know, I don't know. I think we probably haven't heard the end of the story in terms of how different sides want to frame it. I am trying to get some clarity from different people at the moment. You know, this part hasn't really come to the surface just yet, but like, oh, by the way, the tampering stuff in terms of the league's concern predictably was front and center here for them, you know, and they definitely made a bunch of phone calls. Definitely ran some cages.
But how could they tamper if Sacramento had to agree to the deal? That part confused me. How could they tamper with Bogey?
I would think
if Sacramento's the ones like, yeah, get him out of here.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I mean, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But I cut you off there. But like, yeah, I mean, the Kings, you know, they can have a general understanding of where they're at, but they can't talk money until Friday with him. Mm-hmm. And there's not really, I mean, I know that's, we laugh because that's, nobody follows the rules.
Right.
You know, I mean, wait until, you know, free agency begins on Friday. I mean, I swear to God, it's like dozens of deals are already done. It feels that way.
I'm actually surprised that the league is not just saying, hey, look, we kind of understand this is a compressed window and we're going to, you know, allow some leeway here. It seems a little ridiculous.
Like the Subway dude, like picking one person to stop, like while everybody's hopping the turnstiles.
Right.
They just, I mean, they do pick and choose when to crack on teams. And they, and listen, I generally love most of what the league does. They are incredibly reactionary to the public reaction and to the media narrative. And so this one, I think, was just too blatant, too obvious. You know, it's a little bit like the Garrett Temple deal when he signed with Brooklyn in last free agency, where there was some frustration about that, because it's one thing if you're tampering with Kevin Durant, like now we're out here, you know, agreeing with Garrett Temple well in advance of you know, the actual window beginning. But the other thing,
the upper class again, able to get away with stuff that the middle class can't.
Right. Welcome to this league. I mean, the other thing, this was definitely not a coincidence. I mean, about, I guess, 5 hours ago, 4 hours ago, the league, oh, by the way, just pumped out a tampering reminder to all 30 teams via memo. And not really any new information, but, you know, everybody who got that memo immediately was like, oh boy, Kings and Bucks, you know, it's they're kind of put on notice a little bit. So I think that part of it is also coming into play, but I don't know, man. I don't know where Bogey's gonna go.
Hold on, Sam, before you go, because I feel like I'm kind of stupid right now. Like, are the Bucks saying they had something figured out with Bogey and he's changing his mind, or is Bogey saying, nobody talk to me, I'm not cool with any of this?
Was I'm gonna have to like plead the fifth on the Bucks side, because like I gotta wait and see what they choose to say.
Okay.
But yes, like my reporting had been that for sure that the assertion on the Bogdan side was that he was very much blindsided by this. And I will say, in terms of my own experience, like I find that, and the Bucks will probably accuse me of being naive, but as it stands right now, I find that to be fairly credible, because there, you know, some of the stuff that I heard, kind of witnessed firsthand on Monday, fit in pretty nicely with the idea that while he might have been very interested, that the idea, you know, the notion of a trade getting out and being somehow, you know, set in stone, absolutely caught him off guard. And he was, by the way, over in Eastern Europe.
Try to say that Serbian homie lied, man. They don't do that over there.
That's right. I'm positive we will read all about this at The Athletic today. But James Edwards, the man of the hour, has shown up. James, we have been talking all night about how none of us have any idea what happened. The Pistons controlled half of it. What was Detroit doing? What's the Kennard trade? Where did that come from?
The Pistons, as you guys know, have needed a HGTV level renovation for quite some time. and Troy Weaver has come to bring the hammer and nails. I mean, this team needed to start from the ground up. They clearly came in with a bang. The Luke Kennard trade, probably to the outside, is a bit of a surprise, but here, it's not so much. I mean, you look at the kind of guys Troy Weaver likes, long, athletic, versatile guys, and Kennard checks a lot of boxes, but not those ones. There are a lot of questions about his knees. I mean, he had bilateral knee tendonitis in both knees when he went down after Christmas and didn't return due to the lockout. He's a restricted free agent next year. I don't think they want to pay him what he wants. And he's really the only person on this roster that can get you back a first-round pick. So they took the gamble. I don't know if it was much of a massive gamble. While I like Kennard, I don't think anybody in here would argue that he's – I don't think he's going to be an all-star. I think he'll be a good role player for a long time. And the Pistons aren't really in the position to have a good role player for a long time right now. They need to build from the ground up.
I mean, they were certainly active. And I think that that's an improvement to a certain degree. It seemed like the Pistons fans that I know were very excited just that they were involved after an afterthought, right?
Yeah, no, that was massive. I mean, people have just wanted change here, and this is change. I mean, it has really gotten he shook things up today. You look around, it's going to be a bunch of diapers and Blake and Derrick Rose, and you wonder if they're on the move next, but. Yeah, it was. I think Pistons fans were excited. It's something different. There's a plan for once. I think that's the kind of the storyline here is the team has a plan. And for the past 10 years, this team has been stripped of its history and its tradition because of them not having a plan, them trying to build on the fly and be competitive, and it hasn't worked. And finally, they kind of came to their senses and realized they have to build this from the ground up, and that's what's happening. So I have to run, unfortunately. Weaver's to talk. But I'm glad to chat with you guys, and I hope I talk to you guys soon.
Well, thank you for dropping in. Now we get a chance to talk to Jay King about the Celtics. Last but not least, I think.
Probably least, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just wasn't going to – I was going to text you least after this.
it was just a boring draft. It was
– It dropped in their lap.
Of all the
Desmond Bane dropped in their lap, and they
didn't do it,
and they traded
Desmond Bane was definitely the guy all of draft Twitter fell in love with. He was there for the taking at 26 if they wanted him. Decided to trade the 30th pick because they were kind of constricted there, like they just had no roster space. But coming into this day, you knew they were going to try to trade up because they had 3 first round picks and not enough space for it. You knew that the Gordon Hayward situation is still in flux. That is still at least somewhat fluid based on what Brad Stevens said after the first round of the draft. And they drafted like 2 shooters, 2 productive college players who aren't great athletes. And we'll see how they make it in the NBA. But it was... Of all the things they could have done, that was like the most bland route that they took.
Well, can you tell us? Oh, go ahead, Seth.
No, this just seems very – this is something we've talked about before. This seems very out of character for how Danny Ainge has approached the draft in the past is if there's a through line to, you know, any of his picks over the last decade almost, it's like athleticism and physical toughness so that there's – and it seems that they've maybe gone away from that a little bit. In this year's draft, and that's always something that seemed like it's served them well, especially in the postseason, where guys can kind of just step in and at least physically compete.
Yeah, and you saw that with Semi Ojeleye, who could be a casualty, a roster casualty this offseason, but he was never a great player during his time in Boston if it's ended. But the first year in the playoffs, he starts against Giannis, and he always seemed to give the Celtics spot minutes at least when they needed a little defense. And because he is strong and a good athlete, like you said, he was able to step in and handle some of those minutes. I think they can look at their roster now and think they have enough athletes, enough physicality, and maybe it's time to add some complementary shooting. If you look at all their numbers last year, they were totally middle of the pack in outside shooting. I think they were 13th in 3-point percentage, 14th in 3-point makes per 100 possessions, even though their starting lineup was loaded with shooting and playmaking. So that bench really needed a shooting upgrade. I don't know whether Nesmith and Pritchard will end up giving them that, but Nesmith might be the best shooter in the draft. He's got enough size to make you think he should be able to get his shot off. So in theory, he will give the Celtics what they need. We'll see if he can do enough of the other stuff, the passing and dribbling and defending. But you know, he has enough skill that maybe they don't even care about passing and dribbling and defending, and just try to mold him in a Duncan Robinson type, where he gets in great shape and runs around screens and does all that stuff. So we'll see how it goes, but they definitely needed shooting, and they got a couple guys who can really shoot the ball, at least at the college level.
Another gym rat up in Boston.
Two gym rats. Brad Stevens said they're both gym rats.
There you go. Hey, so, all right. Talk to me about the Kemba stuff. I'm a little confused that they were having as hard of a time as it seemed moving him for picks. Do you think he's going to be around when the season starts?
Yeah, I do. I think that was probably overblown. Some of the Kemba for pick stuff. The Celtics, they look into what it would take to trade up every year. Everything I've heard from the front office is that they're pretty confident about how good their team is when healthy and together, and kind of hope that with some internal development from Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, that hopefully they'll be able to take the next step in the Eastern Conference, even without a huge move. Obviously that would get tougher if Gordon Hayward decides to leave. That would get tougher if, you know, none of the younger guys, whether it's Robert Williams, Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, take a step forward next season. It would get tougher if the Eastern Conference is a lot better, which it could be, depending on how Jrue Holiday fits with the Bucks and how Kevin Durant looks in Brooklyn and where James Harden goes. So there's a lot still to be decided in this offseason, but I mean, on a night that could have brought some fireworks for the Celtics, it was just kind of like, all right, happened. They got a couple of good college players, and we'll see.
Well, Seth, Jay, it's just the three of us left. Everybody else has run away. It's getting pretty late. As we wrap, I guess I'll start with you, Seth. Do you have any kind of lasting impression of this draft? I mean, this is like the longest draft class, at least from us, you know, this is their draft class that we've ever had. I know a lot of our draft friends are very tired of this draft class. What is your big takeaway from this class?
A lot of we'll see. More than even most. There. I don't think there's a single sure thing. I mean, Ethan talked about it earlier. You know, at the top, who really wanted to be on the hook for making the first pick, and I think that kind of, you know, percolates all the way down. And so there's just a lot of, I mean, I think everyone is probably going to walk away feeling like they did well, and you know, 60% of the teams, it'll turn out they didn't.
Well, yeah, Jay,
I feel like that's kind of the same way, where a lot of these teams are hopeful that they'll get role players, and are like, there are definitely no sure thing stars in this draft from number one. Anthony Edwards, he could bust it. I don't think very many people in the NBA would be all that surprised. And he was a number one pick. A lot of people I talked to liked the prospect of a number of first round guys as potential role players. But I'm not sure we're going to look at this draft years from now and be like, you know what? There are a lot of all-stars from that draft. That's probably not going to happen.
Ethan, any big takeaways from this draft?
I'm just looking over the Mannion pick right now by the Warriors. Uh-huh. And trying to figure that one out. I mean, Mannion, he looked so good at the beginning of the college season and then fell off like crazy. And I mean, some would say it's the back injury. Some would say it's his own limitations. So It's interesting to me. You would think they'd be trying to fill out the roster a little bit more towards the shooting guard spot, considering what's going on with Klay Thompson. So I was completely hypnotized by the Mannion selection. I don't have any big meta analysis other than perhaps the Warriors are over as of today, and perhaps they aren't.
I love what the Sixers did. I don't know if you guys talked about that before I hopped on the pod, but
yeah,
I really appreciate the fact that they actually went out and got players that should fit with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. It is a novel concept, and they had to pay a lot to get rid of Al Horford's contract. But to get back Danny Green, to get Seth Curry, to get guys who don't necessarily need the ball a ton but can make shots and space the court for Simmons and Embiid, I think is a really, really key move for them.
All right. Well, wait, Seth, I don't want to cut you off.
No.
Nope. You sure?
No, Barry.
All right. I do that enough every week.
Yeah.
All right. For Zach Harper, Wazzy Lambre, Trevon Edwards, Seth Partnow, Marcus Thompson, John Krasinski, Jay King, Sam Amick, Ethan Strauss, and James Edwards, I'm Dave DeFore, and this has been Nerd or Tamper Buds Contention Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show.